There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 45. Going to talk some ADP risers and fallers, some PLV. Yeah, we'll explain that to you later. At least Ryan will. Some recent news and much, much more. You can find myself on Twitter at BDN. Check the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. My co-host is always on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
We're great, man. We are four weeks away. I'm already, there's injuries rolling in, there's Statcast readings rolling in, there's lineups. It's fun to see everything going on. So I'm stoked. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Another Thursday, Bubba in the Bloom. Pretty pumped on this. I look forward to this every week. So we got some baseball, like you said, that's actually happening. Some unfortunate news that has happened so far. You mentioned Statcast. I wanted to ask you about this because in the Gaining the Edge Discord, it's been a topic of conversation, and I know I've seen it. Like John Anderson and some other guys on Twitter have talked about it. I always get suspect because we're talking about like minor league / spring training ballparks. Like, how good is the technology? Like, they had Ryan McMahon hit 117 mile an hour ball, his career best, like 111. Little suspect there. I even think like the radar guns, you know, there's hot guns. Like, all of a sudden, all the Twins guys except one is like throwing just massive cheese, like 3 miles an hour over their numbers. How much of this do you take into consideration? Like, we like to look for like velocity risers and stuff like that, but we have to also, I think, take into account that some of these ballparks might not have the best of equipment involved.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I'm pretty much ignoring, like, especially hitter exit velocity. Like, it's not something I really look at. Cause you mentioned, and there is a really good thread, John Anderson at John PGH on Twitter put something out today that the Statcast guns are a little bit hot. At least it looks that way. But the other thing is just like quality of competition. Who are these guys hitting off of? There are even if it is like a minor league pitcher or, you know, even a major league guy who's just trying out a new pitch. Like we just, I don't know. There's so many variables. So personally, like the things I look at for hitters are basically just playing time and stolen base attempts. So it's kind of random, but I am interested in guys that actually are running in spring training. If they have a green light in spring, probably bodes well. In the majors, HQ has done some research on that and has proven that out. So basically just playing time and stolen base attempts for hitters. Pitchers, like, honestly, man, just health and velocity. But even velocity, which we'll probably get into with Mr. Eovaldi, even velocity can be a little overrated. So I don't know. It's so tempting to like overreact to all this stuff. I'm kind of sitting it out, to be honest.
And it's fun. It's natural to overreact. We finally have baseball it back. Is. Like, cool things are happening. But I'm trying to like temper myself. Like, hey, like that's a grain of salt. A lot of things. Like prove. Like I said in the Discord thing, it was, you know, okay, this is one start. Let's do like the next start and the start after that. And then we can start saying yes, no, or the other type situation. Because also like with pitchers, they're probably still ramping up. They might not be ready to rock and roll. So they're, like you said, we'll talk about it with the Eovaldi and some others coming up. So it's just something to keep in mind. You mentioned stolen bases, and I know we have some stuff to talk about here. And I didn't put it on the outline, but Did you happen to see Jason Collette's thread on Stolen Bases? Because, you know, he's that genius guy that can put Excel sheets together and look into past research and stuff. And he basically, I think it was just from like the first week of spring training, like stolen base attempts, and he compared it to previous spring trainings and this, that, and the other. And it looks like we might have a lot of stolen bases this year if trends stay the same.
I saw the thread. I don't like recall off the top of my head just how big the bump was, but it was pretty significant from what I remember. And I mean, this is a math game. Like if even with the bigger bases, with timing, with the pitch clock and pickoff throws, if you're able to steal successfully more than three quarters of the time, it's like 75%, it's that kind of break even point, they're going to run. And so, it definitely seems like we need to giddy up and get ready for this. I think fantasy wise, like I think I'm knocking down the guys that just do not run at all, pretty considerably, to be honest. Like guys that just don't have a stolen base attempt, or maybe like one a year or something like that. I think those guys, from a valuation standpoint, I think those guys are really going to set you back in steals if what we think is going to happen, which is kind of what Jason was alluding to in the thread, actually turns out to be.
Yeah, I pulled up the thread real quick, and he said in 2022 spring training, as of the time of like this tweet, he said last year spring training steals attempted per game were 0.77. Where last season during this, and Eno Saris mentioned that teams run more in spring training in the regular season. Makes sense. But even last year in the regular season, 0.68. So 0.77 to 0.68, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So far in the early spring, teams were running 1.07 times per game. So from 0.77 to 1, like it doesn't sound like much in the grand scheme, but that's a big gap. That's like a large chunk. And then, of course, then Jason does a big breakdown going forward of spring training versus regular season and differences and all this stuff, does graphs, blah, blah, blah. He's much smarter than I am. He basically says in the end, the rate over the course of the regular season will result in 4,131 attempts, which is 25.2% improvement over the last season's 3,297. Almost 1,000 more attempts. If you think like 900 more attempts, if the same trends take place, is what I'm trying to say. So obviously these are all speculations, but if you follow the numbers from he went back to 2010, the trends, and that's a jump, almost 900 to 1,000 more attempts. Even, and most guys are like, most teams are 70-ish%, if not 80% probably in steals. It's a lot of stolen bases. So yeah, it could be fun. Something to monitor.
I'm excited for it. Like just as a watching baseball, I do want to see more action like that. So I'm personally excited for it. And I guess, I don't know, we can't have a podcast and not have an opinion on the pitch clock.
I was just about to ask.
Have you seen any spring games? Like, what do you think?
My thing is like, we saw it in Arizona, and we saw the last 2 years in Arizona. They used it the first year. I'll never forget Torkelson was like sitting there. I think he struck out because he wasn't in the box. We're like, what? Like, we came here to see Torque. Like, what are you doing? Like, it's, but in spring, and then you talk to guys even in minor leagues, they get used to it. And that's just how this all is. It's so new to all of us that haven't paid attention to the game. It's a transition. Like all things in life, transitions suck. Trust me, I know transitions suck. So, but you get used to it, and you'd be surprised, because you look at the length of games in the minor leagues last year, you look at the lengths of games already. And I'm not a guy that cares. I don't care if the game is 4 hours long, as long as it's entertaining. It's those 4 hour games when it's like literally the most boring, slow, like you could like want to just poke yourself with a pen the entire time because it's so boring. Those are the ones that suck. If it's a great 4 hour game, sure, that's awesome, let's do it. Most of them aren't, so this is to speed that up. Now if teams are hitting, like I think there was like a 16 or like a 13 to 11 game already this spring, and it still took less than 3 hours to play. That's awesome, that's entertaining, it's quick, it's moving. I think we'll be fine.
I agree. I honestly love the clock. I love the pace of the game. It's really, yeah, like, I mean, you nailed it, Bubba. It's 3 hours, 3.5 hours. I don't really care. I just want kind of a, not continuous action, but I want things to kind of move along. I don't want 30, 45 seconds in between pitches. So I really like it. The one thing, I think everyone watched that first spring training game when the actual like clock was right behind the hitter. And that like gave me so much anxiety watching the clock tick down between every single thing. I was like, God, I hope it's not like this. But it doesn't, it sounds like for regular season, even in most spring parks, they are going to put that clock out of our view, at least. Like
I know,
watching it
I know in San Francisco, because they already have the clock like in between innings and other things that that run to speed up play, and it's right below the scoreboard. Like you can see, it's almost like a shot clock or like in football, like a game clock where it's in the end zones type thing. I think it'll be something like that, where you'll see it in most ballparks in that kind of scenario. So not too worried like, about it. Yeah,
the first time I was just watching the clock go down.
That was bad. Like I'd be just focused on that, and that'd be horrible. The last thing I'll mention on this, unless you want to go farther, is did you see it was split screen? It was Pedro Baez trying to throw one pitch versus one of the pitchers completing an entire inning. That's my point. Like, that's my point. Like, I don't need the game to be sped up that much, but if it takes a dude, like a guy in spring training got three outs, faced three batters, and not just one pitch to each batter, like multiple pitches before a sequence last season where Pedro Baez threw one total pitch.
The human rain delay, man. And usually Pedro Baez is pitching when it's like
serious
6-2 or something. Yeah. Like I don't know. That needs to move along. So
I'm at. Like it doesn't need to ruin all parts of the game, but that stuff needs to go. That's what it's trying to weed out, basically. Yeah.
There is something to be said for like I do understand, like in higher leverage moments, especially the playoffs, there is that like tense that builds up in between pitches. I'll probably miss that. I'm assuming the pitch clock's going through to the postseason. I'd imagine,
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's nothing's perfect. I think it's a small price to pay for an entire regular season of games moving at a pace that is enjoyable to watch. And really the reason they're doing this is to try and bring more fans into the game. It's been tested. I think it's a much more aesthetically pleasing product, and hopefully that does bring more people into baseball and selfishly fantasy baseball, and selfishly even more to the Bubba and the Bloom.
Exactly. Of course. And honestly, again, I keep saying the last thing, but it just dawned on me when you said bringing people in. So I have a tradition where I've taken my daughter since she was a baby to at least one game a year. I don't know about you, Ryan, but when you have a toddler at a baseball game, those games are so long, keeping their attention is very difficult. The longer you make these games, you'll never make it to the end. Now we might actually get to see a full game. Like, we might actually see a full game of baseball. Just throwing it out there.
You are a better man than me. I haven't even attempted. I'll probably try it this year. I'll probably bring our three-year-old up.
I'll say your three-year-old could probably T-Mobile. Hang. And most of these parks now have kid areas, so you can play for a bit and have some fun, so... Yeah, you don't sit in your seat the whole time. Trust me on that.
Fully prepared to space out. I was talking to at first pitch. This was like, I think this was last year or 2 years ago. I'm going to mess up his last name. I just call him Steve Cozzolino. Probably totally butchered that. And he gave me the like ultimate advice of bringing your kids to games. And it's like space out the snacks every probably 2-3 innings, ice cream last, like he had it down, like what to do between each break. And that was some of the best parental advice.
One trick I had this last time around is I bought a extra seat in between me and her mother. And so she could run back and forth between the two of us. It was worth the price of the seat. I'm just going to throw that out there. You basically have a barricade, so she can't go anywhere. Just throwing that out there. All right. Let's talk some recent news. People are like, oh, this is not Bubba the Bloom, but hey, here we are. This is fun. It's that time of the year. We're talking baseball. Like, it's good times. Let's talk recent news, then we'll talk some bad times here. Gavin Lux out for the season with a torn ACL, nasty looking deal. Like, I saw his ankle buckle, and you saw his knee. Like, it just looked bad all over, and it wasn't it. And like, I don't like the Dodgers. People know that. I still don't want to see guys get hurt. Watching him talking his interview once he found it sucked. You saw him crying. It's not cool. Like, I don't want to see, and people know I'm not a Gavin Lux fantasy guy. So it's just like, it was a total thing, but I still don't want to see him get hurt. Like, that sucked. And he's out for the year, obviously. So fantasy wise, it opens things up. Like, Rojas might get time now. Chris Taylor can move, which could open up outfield. How do you see this one playing out in LA? Cause we do know they like to mix and match a lot as it is, and they still might with this scenario. At the same time, they might want to kind of pin down a shortstop.
Yeah, I guess for now it's going to be Miguel Rojas at shortstop, Miguel Vargas, the two Miguels up the middle, Miguel Vargas at second base. I love it for Chris Taylor, man. Chris Taylor is someone who's I wrote an article for HQ this week and called it Searching for This Year's Adelis Garcia. I was looking for guys with certain power speed profiles that Adelis Garcia has that are going outside the top like 150, 200. Chris Taylor totally popped on that list. Yes, he needs to stay healthy, but like Taylor can play second, short, and outfield. And I just can't see LA like going the full season with the two Miguels up the middle. The last takeaway I think of this is like LA's lineup, man, it is thin. Like we've talked about, and you know, you probably like to hear this. We talk about like really prioritizing pitcher wins and drafting pitchers on good teams. We automatically assume pitchers on LA are good for that team context part and probably are from a ratio standpoint. But I don't know about like counting on a Julio Urias 17 win season again. This lineup is, I think, nowhere near, even before Lux, but now, like, nowhere near. Look at that smile on your face. Nowhere near what it was last year and what we're used to when we think LA offense.
Yeah, because like I got roster resources, Mookie Betts, Freeman, Will Smith, Muncy, JD. That's good, but like, is Muncy the guy we're hoping he's going to be? We both like him, but is he? JD Martinez, does he bounce back? If they both don't, it's Betts, Freeman, Will Smith.
Yep, because it's just not deep. Yeah, that second half of the lineup.
Peralta, Trace, Miguel, right. Vargas, Rojas, like that's not what you want to go to battle with. Not the Dodgers we know.
And you know, I mean, an injury is going to hit Betts, Freeman, Smith, Muncy. I mean, it's just not deep is kind of what I'm.
And they got rid of Edwin Rios, like idiots. So I guess I'll ask you this part of it. Does it maybe lower like the Betts of the world in drafts for you?
No, I don't think so. I think like the immediate lineup around those guys at the top, even Freeman, I think they're fine. I think it's more. Yeah, just calibrating to an offense that might be like league average, maybe just a little better than league average, which is weird to say.
Hate to see it. Really hate to see it.
for the audio, the smile on Bubba's face right now.
Just happened to be wearing this shirt too. Yeah, so just throwing it out there. Like
Will Clark behind him, Giants polo on, just smiling as I talk.
Oh, it's glorious. Baseball season, baby. Hey, we're still undefeated right now. Tyler Glass now. Oblique strain, the dude just can't stay healthy, Bloom. Like, this is bad deal. They're saying he might only miss, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, so he's, but whatever, like, I don't care. The dude just can't stay healthy. It's a perennial thing with him. It sucks. I was already off of him because I wanted to see him put together a season, but this does not bode well. So what's your thoughts on Glass now?
So a couple of these guys that were talking about injuries, I just took their TGFBI ADP. Because I think it's interesting to see kind of how far they've fallen this week. You know, TGFBI started like right after Glasnow got hurt. And so like
Glasnow, great, great thread you have going on with yours, by the way. Very unique.
My TGFBI?
Yeah, like that very one? Unique. That's good. That's good stuff.
Yeah, for anyone who hasn't seen, I don't know. It's half in jest, half not, but I kind of bag each of my picks.
It's awesome.
I give the case against taking them. I'm big on, I don't know. There's so much like, this is my pick, and this is why it's the greatest pick of all time. We all know a lot of these picks are going to suck. So anyway, yes, that's been well received. I need to do a couple more of those after the show tonight.
I love it. Just love it.
Glasnow dropped from like I think he was going like the sixth round to, in TGFBI, Glasnow is down to like 142. So my question, well, I think I know the answer since you're totally off, Bubba. But Glasnow's going before Giolito, before Charlie Morton, before Luis Garcia. I mean, is there any chance you take Morton over those guys?
Yeah. I do not take Glasnow over any of them, no.
Yeah. I just
not a chance.
And I wouldn't either. It's just those, that's the kind of the new level that you're gonna have to think about if you want to take that plunge on Glasnow. I'm not doing it. I just think obliques A can linger more so for hitters, but can definitely linger for pitchers. And Glasnow with the innings risk already, the ramp up time, like I think they're going to be super careful with him.
Like, because here's my biggest thing, this was even before the injury, but now this just makes it worse. So since 2016, 23.1 innings, 62, 111.2, 60, 57, 88, 6.2. Like, where do we see a world where he pans out? Now he's hurt for another 2 months. I just, Like, was he awesome before he got hurt? Oh, yeah. He was amazing before he got hurt last year. I'm not going to downplay that at all. That was awesome. But it's just like the dude just can't stay healthy. You got to prove it to me. Eventually, like, some of these guys just don't stay healthy. Maybe this is the Kopech trail, too. I don't know. But we're seeing the same trend going on with Kopech, which would suck to see. Maybe he's better suited for, you know, relieving duty or something. I don't know. But the question I got for you then is, you know, Shane O'Mac, he's, you know, velocity, great the first time out. Rasmussen, Eflin, Springs, maybe Yanni Chirinos, maybe I just totally blanked on his name, but
Patino,
maybe Luis Patino. Are you have interest in any of those guys now with Glasnow going out?
No, I took Patino in my AL tout last year, and it was rough. No, I don't just from a skill. I know Patino has some prospect pedigree, but we haven't seen really much from the majors. I don't even think either of those guys, Chirinos or Patino, will go five innings. So maybe like as a streamer, when you know who's going to be the opener versus the primary kind of a deal against a weaker matchup. But no, I'm not interested really at all in either of those two guys.
All right. Say it ain't so, Seiya Suzuki. He oblique strain. It took me almost 20 minutes, Bloom. Give me some credit here. Oblique strain. And he's just kind of maybe getting ready to ramp up. It's not looking great for opening day, I don't think. So does that mean we got time for Christopher Morel? I mean, Patrick Wisdom gets put into third base. There's a lot of questions to be played here, but I know you're a big Seiya guy this year.
Yeah. And actually, like, I don't know, no one cares about my teams. Say is one of those guys where like I've been higher on than I think the market. I just don't have him on many teams. And so I don't know. It's just kind of luck. Sounds like he's going to start the season on the IL. There was an update to that tonight. So it like if they're already saying that, you gotta at least plan for a significant chunk, I think, of April for Seiya to be out. I think it is Christopher Morel time. So in that same column that I wrote with Garcia, where I mentioned finding this year's Adelis Garcia, where I mentioned Chris Taylor, I also mentioned Morel. And so at HQ, we have a couple power speed metrics where that we look at. There are four guys last year who were 40% better than league average in raw power and raw speed. J-Rod, Adelis Garcia, Byron Buxton, and Christopher Morel. I think Christopher Morel is a really good buy. Someone who, and again, these injuries, these are going to pop up throughout the season. I think Morel now has a starting gig in the outfield, but he can also play. I mean, he'll move around as injuries come up. So Christopher Morel, for me, is a great power speed guy. The plate skills are just okay. So I really like him there. Hey, Suzuki, Bubba, and TGFBI. ADP is down to like 134. So going like 9th, 10th round, not a major drop, but would you take Seiya over like Hunter Renfro, Ian Happ? That's kind of where he's going in TGFBI right now. I'd lean towards taking a shot, but
it's an interesting proposition. I just took Renfro actually in a league. So I think Seiya might've been gone at that point in time, but I'm still hesitant. I know Rob DiPietro mentioned he was in a draft recently, got him around pick 200. That's awesome. I'd be all aboard that train. Yeah.
Kudos, yeah.
But I don't know. I've been taking more chances recently in drafts just because I'm trying to change my mindset on certain guys. But those oblique strains, man, it just terrifies me. Like pitchers way more than hitters. Like at least say I can kind of see an avenue. But yeah, I'd probably go Renfro still or Happ. I like Happ a lot too. But the Morel comment, I wanted to comment on that just real quick. I've drafted him in a lot of places. I love Christopher Morel for a lot of the reasons you mentioned. And Sarah Sanchez was on the Cubs preview with me. And she mentioned a lot of really positive things, a lot of the things you just mentioned about his power, his speed. He's only going to be 24 this year. He's still super young. Like so there's might be even more development with him. So I think there's definitely something there with Christopher Morel. So I'm hoping even when Seiya comes back, just get Patrick Wisdom out of there. Like put Morel at third, figure it out. So we'll see how that goes.
Morel's kind of the ultimate, like, I think has the profile of someone who really can, from a stolen base aspect, get a lot better in steals because he got a red light and he wasn't that successful. Or sorry, he got a green light and wasn't that successful last year. 60% stolen base success rate, which is pretty bad, but he still ran. And that success rate is going to improve with these new rules. And if Chicago is willing to give him a green light when he wasn't that great, I think they'll absolutely keep doing it. when he's a little bit better. So
sounds like a Randy or Rosarena formula to me. So
dude, that guy might attempt like 80 bags this year.
Yep. Can't wait. Can't wait. Joe Musgrove just proves why you guys don't need to go to the gym. It's very simple, people. Don't work out. He fractured his toe by dropping a weight on it. Like, okay, I understand pitchers are athletes too. I get it. What's he doing? Like, what are we doing right now? Like, you know, use a machine that's like, the weights are hooked up to a freaking strap or something. Like, you don't need to be lifting weights there. So they're saying he's probably going to miss at least two starts to start the season. Hopefully that's it. We'll see. But I don't know. Not happy about this, but I have taken my chances. I'll say that much.
I'm team free weights, man. I don't get those machines out of here. You gotta improve that flexibility. Use muscles that you're not used to using.
There's my free weight for you.
That's a high noon for the listeners at home that Bubba's doing bicep curls. I don't. He needs to work out. He's got to go deep into games, that sort of thing. No, that sucks. Walk. Yeah, exactly. Honestly, like you need that endurance. You took Joe Musgrove, so I'm going to flip this back on you. You took Joe Musgrove. You had in your you had your Tout Wars 12 team mixed league. I don't want to say like alternate format, but innings instead of wins. And you took Musgrove, what, like 14th round?
Round 14, yeah.
I thought that was fantastic. Now, in Tout Wars, you do have IL. So, like, it totally, like, that totally makes sense. If you're in a league with IL spots, I texted you when I saw you pick Musgrove. I was like, that's the perfect, like, type of player to use that IL slot on because it's not an arm injury. Yes, he's not throwing right now. He's going to be a little bit delayed, but like I think there's a decent chance you miss a few April starts, and in the grand scheme of things, that's well worth the discount of where Joe Musgrove's going.
100%. And we talked about it, like you said, off the air, but when I saw where he was, I almost took him the round before. I'm like, okay, I'll play the game. If he comes back, I'll definitely take him, stash him on the IL. In this format, he's an innings eater. That's what I want. I want innings pitch. He's not going to crush my ratios. He's going to get strike. Like we know who Joe Musgrove is. He's like an SP2 if he was healthy, if not 3 at worst. Like he's a legit awesome guy. And now he's my SP4 or 5 because he fell so far in drafts. I'll take that for a few April starts, like you said. Like I'll still probably get 27 starts from him this year, maybe. Give or take, you'd imagine maybe
that's
28.
What I'm saying. Like, yeah,
like, I'm all aboard that train. And like you said, also, it's nothing arms, nothing shoulder. It's legit a toe, a freaking toe.
It's a freak accident. And
yeah,
like
let it heal and roll.
TGFBI Musgrove's going around 120 between like Blake Snell, right after Blake Snell, right before Nestor Cortez, Clayton Kershaw, Lodolo, Lance Lynn. I really like Lance Lynn, but I think I'd still take Musgrove over. I think all those guys.
Yeah, I tried to take him, and I'm going to wait one more round thinking someone took him two picks before me around like the 130-ish range in my draft. I'm very mad at myself for that. Like I was playing chicken and I lost in that draft. That I was in the same boat you were though, because I'm willing to wait a few starts for a guy like that. He's a game changer, especially in a 15-team format like TGFBI.
Yeah,
having that guy stash as like your SP3 or 4 is amazing. Like that's, again, we've said it. It's not his shoulder. It's not his elbow. It's none of that stuff. So game on, game on.
Just be prepared. Like in an NFBC, like that is your stash. You generally don't want two stashes. So like, you're not going to try and stash a minor leaguer or take another injured guy.
He's one of the better stashes you could have though. Like legit one of the better stashes.
Yes. I mean, that's right. Like, I think you take this shot at this time.
Yeah, for sure. A guy that we were big on like 2 episodes ago, Brendan Rodgers. Might not be so big on him anymore. Dislocated his shoulder, had to get it popped back into place. I haven't seen a timetable to come back to normal, but I know when he pops something back in, it takes a little while to heal properly. So, yeah, he might be done for a bit.
It sounds like, so the update today was like they're talking about surgery.
That bad. Sweet.
Yeah, like it sounds really bad. Maybe that'll change over the weekend or something, but that's the info we have at this point. And so it's rough, man. I don't really know so Colorado could do 2 things from here. One of which is like mildly fantasy relevant. The other is not. They could move Ryan McMahon to second base. And then that would free up Elarius Montero at third, who could be really good. At least on weeks where Colorado is at home, the less appealing fantasy option is just to backfill Rodgers at second base with like Harold Castro, who's a non-roster invitee, Jesus. Or Alan Trejo. Like, we don't want that, people. I'd like to see McMahon go over to second and then Montero get a shot at third base, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's where Ryan was before. He was second base, third base eligible dude. It was awesome. And Montero, we saw flashes of goodness. So I'd be all aboard that. Hopefully cooler heads prevail. One quick thing. Did you see the note that Bud Black said he's going to try to rest more of his regulars in Colorado to not affect the Colorado shift when he goes on the road?
Yeah, great. I did.
God. Like
the fantasy industry shook their collective heads.
Oh my God, Bud Black, you guy. It actually makes sense from a baseball standpoint, probably, but like not for us. Couple quick hitter here. Yordan Alvarez looking good. He's taking swings. He expects to be ready to rock and roll. Let's hope that stays that way. Yep. Tyrone Taylor, though, I thought of you immediately with this, with one of your last picks in your labor draft. Tyrone Taylor was battling an issue, and now news came out. He's probably going to miss at least the first month, if not 2 months of the season. Like, he's going to be out for a while. That frees up outfield. Now, similar to Colorado, they could do it the lazy way and just put like Brian Anderson and a couple of platoons out there, or you can get one of your boys, Frelick, out there potentially. So how are you looking at this Milwaukee situation that could open up some fantasy goodness or just be a complete disaster also?
And this is why at the top of the show, like I was saying, playing time is what I'm looking for on the hitter side in spring training. Like, I don't know how this is going to turn out, but I think this is a situation where like spring training playing time is going to matter and indicate who's going to play regular season. Like Sal Frelick's a very popular kind of end game play who I took in labor. And so like this obviously helps his chances of making the roster. I'm not saying he's going to, but it could be Bryce Terang. It could be Jesse Winker. Like, I don't know. I feel like, overall, it's going to be Milwaukee has so many bodies. I think it's going to be more of like not a straight replacement. It's just going to be guys moving around. Like Winker's going to go back and forth between outfield DH type of deal, and they'll rotate outfielders. So we'll see. That's just my prediction. But I think Sal Frelick, it's just one less obstacle for him.
Yep. Biggest thing there. Felix Bautista, who we talked about last week as a concern, he's already thrown a few bullpens. He looks like he'll be ready to go. Got him in round six in TGFBI. Thank you, everybody. Big fan of that one. Couldn't pass up on that situation. So enjoyed that quite a bit.
Just to tie in just real quick, the Bautista, and you mentioned Yordan. I mean, we alluded to this a little bit last week, but like,
there's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The overreaction of January, February injuries can present, I mean, they could be legit injuries and you're screwed, can present discounts if it is just a minor thing. And everything is magnified at this point in the season. So those are two examples there.
Not to mention, I know it's a saves hold league in tout. I got Felix Bautista around 18 in tout. Like, wow. I know it's different, but a lot of the elite closers went way before that. And before his injury, he was like the fifth or sixth closer off the board. So
that seems light.
It was rich.
Nice. So your tout team's going to win, right?
No.
Between Musgrove and Felix Bautista.
There's a lot of other questionable picks in that draft. So let's just, I took some gambles in that league. So we're going to leave it at that. Daniel Bard cut his thumb, could have missed some time. I had Matt Heckman on talking about the Rockies, and he loved the Nelson Lamet even before this injury. Could open the door for a former San Diego pitcher who pitched well out of the bullpen recently. Any thoughts on this situation in Colorado?
No, I think he's fine. I think Bard's going to be fine. I think the early velocity is kind of down. I don't know if that's related.
Yes.
Or if he's just ramping up or what, but I think Bard has quite the long leash, unless, like, I don't know. How did he cut his, is it a weird injury? Did he cut it in the game?
He cut it during the game.
Oh, he didn't like cut his thumb off cooking.
No, it wasn't Jeremy Affeldt trying to get, frozen hamburgers taken apart. It wasn't that.
Didn't know that name was going to come up tonight.
Yeah. Welcome to the show, folks.
Jeremy Affeldt. No, I'm not worried about Bard.
Daniel Bard was one guy that said the thing with the pitch clock that's hardest for him is as the inning goes on, it's hard for him to keep his endurance to keep the pitches going that fast, which is a whole other thing to think about as well. So
I noticed that, and that makes sense.
That makes a ton of sense, 100%. And then we'll go to your boy, Nathan Eovaldi. He has side tightness / an oblique injury. They haven't gone too detailed into it. They're going to let him take a little break to heal up before he hits the spring training circuit again. So what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, the blurb was like, oh, it's just similar to DeGrom. He'll be fine.
Yep.
Oh, now we're comparing.
But then if you look at the comments, like the first person goes, you left out oblique injury.
Yeah, it's we all got excited about Eovaldi's first spring appearance. He looked great. He was, I think, like sitting 97, 98.
Yep.
And like sometimes velocity increases aren't the best thing. Like, did he just go way too hard too early and hurt himself? Still a very much like, I don't know if this injury is, it could very well be minor, but like, it's just a reminder of Eovaldi. Like, I mean, he was one of the worst second half pitchers comparing first half to second half last year. And it was because he was injured with arm injuries and velocity loss. Like, that stuff doesn't just heal in the off season usually. So I'm still off of Eovaldi as much as it pains me to say. And this is just another reason why.
Yep. I've been pretty much off too. And this is terrifying. Someone at Glasnow just doesn't pitch innings very often. So it's a problem. All right. Let's get to the first of two Bloom boards on this wonderful Bubba in the Bloom episode. We're talking ADP rises and fallers. It is March 2nd. We've gone from February to March, if you can keep track of the lunar calendar. What are your thoughts on this Bloom board you put together with risers and fallers ADP-wise?
All right, just real quick. This is, and again, we'll post, I tweeted this out before the show, but we'll post it from the pod account Friday morning. ADP risers and fallers since I was going to do like January to February, but that's just extremely arbitrary. So I just did before and after pitchers and catchers reported. So like February 16th. And so I've got the top like 10 risers and fallers. I've mentioned this before. I think we did this a little while back, but when I look at risers and fallers, I'm looking at the rise and fall of the value of the draft pick. So if somebody goes from the 20th round to the 18th round, that's nowhere near as big as someone going from the 6th round to the 4th round because those early picks are so much more valuable. A lot of the guys that are falling are the guys you would expect. Lance McCullers Jr. from 201 to 307. Aaron Ashby, like your injured guys. The guys that are rising, I think, are particularly interesting to me. There are a couple kind of random fallers, but that's the general gist of this. Is just keep tabs on trends in the market. I used the NFBC online championship for this because, and I'm leaning more into this more often because I know the exact dates of when those were taken. If you use draft champions, like those drafts are, could be 2-3 weeks. Yeah. And I think they only count like the day that it ends. So with online championships, you know, like this is the day that it drafted and it was over that day. So
it's a good call. I don't
know. Who do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about some of the risers first. Like, obviously, Hunter Brown's an obvious one with Lance McCullers' injury. That makes a ton of sense. Miguel Vargas as well. I want to ask you about Jordan Walker. ADP of 209 before pitchers and catchers, 178 now. He's been playing pretty much every game in left field. He's hitting very well. The hype train is in full effect right now. I took him in tout, I believe. I got to double check. Pretty sure I did. it's a fun hype train. The talent is ridiculous, but again, he hasn't played above double A, so that's kind of concerning a bit. But it looks like it's his job to lose almost, it feels like. What's your thoughts on this move?
So, like, I don't want to get too excited. This cuts against my grain of, like...
Yeah, I did take him around 15. Yeah, I just saw that. Yeah.
Okay. Like, chances are he'll probably be overdrafted and maybe even start in a minor. I have no idea. But this just reminds me of a year ago where there was a consensus top five prospect, extremely young, didn't have the experience, but just destroyed spring training. And that guy's name was Julio Rodriguez. He was going like around 200 before spring training and just kept hitting, kept playing. And he was Julio Rodriguez. I'm not saying Jordan Walker is going to do that, but like, this is the profile of someone who could. I mean, this is someone who has Julio Rodriguez. Maybe not. I mean, he's ranked roughly as high as Rodriguez was last year. Walker was. So like, I could see it. I don't know. The only thing is, like, St. Louis has so many bodies.
That's the problem.
I don't know. And if St. Louis calls up Jordan Walker and starts on the team, like, you would think they want to play him every single day. So that's kind of the downside. But like, Jordan Walker going from pick 209 to 178. I mean, 170, that's going to keep going. You're going to have to think, are you taking a top 10 round pick on this guy? It can absolutely pay off. I'm probably not doing it, but I could. It's just like, has those Julio Rodriguez vibes of a year ago.
Yeah, and I like him in an OC format like this, a 12-teamer where there's replacement value potentially on the waiver wire. I think there's definitely something there. The hardest part, like you mentioned, the playing time. One of the hardest parts for the Cardinals when WBC starts in a week, they have so many guys playing in the WBC. Like their spring training lineups in about a week are going to look just a bit like he's going to be the standout in that lineup pretty much. And so then it's like, okay, when these guys come back from WBC, is it still his job? Or it's like, it's two sides. He can prove himself that they make him keep playing, like just keeps hitting, or he's just kind of holding a spot until these guys come back from WBC. That's the conundrum, given he's doing it before they left, which is great. But we also know in early spring training, the vets don't play that much anyways. So it's like a double-edged sword with Jordan Walker right now that I'm trying to like temper my excitement, but it's hard not to be a little excited with Jordan Walker.
You had Matt Thompson. Did Matt Thompson bring him up? I mean, did you guys talk about Walker?
He said it in a few letters. I'm pretty sure Jordan Walker is not on the 40 man. So that is something that people need to pay attention to, because that means the Cardinals will have to make a completely different roster change and release somebody. And that makes things a little different. If a guy's on a 40 man, obviously it's a lot easier to do the up and down game, but he's not there. So either someone has to get a serious injury, go to a 60-day IL, or they have to literally release somebody, essentially. And that changes the game as well. And the Cardinals aren't big fans of that kind of scenario. But what Matt Thompson also said is, in all the trades the Cardinals have made, everyone has wanted Jordan Walker, and the Cardinals always said, no, you can't have Jordan Walker. So keep that in mind as well. Yeah. Just like the Astros with Kyle Tucker. Everyone on Kyle Tucker, no, you can't have Kyle Tucker. So we'll see. It's an interesting situation. I like the kind of comp, like you said, you're not comping him to J-Rod production-wise, but the way it's going, there is a lot of similarities to last season in that regard. Pete Fairbanks, 177 to 153. I think that's an interesting jump, because we always talk about how Tampa Bay, you know, doesn't have like a lockdown closer all the time, but there's rumors like, but then you talk to Jason Collette and he talks about they always have a lockdown closer, then they get hurt. So that's how a lot of it changes. So Fairbanks could be the guy, could get you 20 plus saves. So what's your thoughts on him jumping 24 spots?
Yeah, this actually might be like a Collette going on the podcast tour talking about this. Because I mean, really nothing's changed with Pete Fairbanks from the beginning of February to now. I think we're realizing that we're trying to get over, and I say we, the fantasy community is I think getting over this automatic assumption that Tampa always has a closer committee, which is not true. Fairbanks signed, so there's no arbitration wrangling needed with this. I mean, he is legitimately, when he's healthy, Pete Fairbanks hasn't thrown more than 45 innings in the majors in his career. So keep that in mind. But on a per inning basis, Pete Fairbanks is one of the best pitchers in baseball. And it does seem like he's going to get at least the majority of the saves in Tampa, which probably equates to like 30 saves if he's healthy and pitches well all season. Yeah. So I think Pete Fairbanks, where he's going recently, which is what, 153, 10th round in a 15 teamer. I would sign up for that pretty quickly. I think, I mean, you're looking at like him or like Scott Barlow or Daniel Bard, who we just talked about. I think Fairbanks is right there, if not better.
Okay, I'm just gonna have fun with this because Clay Holmes is one of the guys from 107 to 97. Would you rather have Pete Fairbanks or Clay Holmes, who there's question marks there still?
Straight up, I'd take Holmes. Okay. Even considering ADP, I think I'd take Holmes. There was a news blurb that I think the headline that I saw was like Holmes won't close every game for the Yankees, but I read the piece. I mean, he's their closer. And the quote was more just like he may not close every ninth. It may go to the eighth, but Holmes is, I think Holmes.
I think I know your answer here. Fairbanks at 153 or a boy that's gone from 147 to 132 and Alexis Diaz.
Fairbanks, man.
They announced that Alexis Diaz is the closer and people are running to draft him now. It's like, I know people don't all listen to our show, but I know we're not the only ones saying this because like Erickson preaches it and others do. It's the Reds, people. They just don't care about your closing situation at all. So that one's probably that jump in ADP was a kind of interesting.
I mean, the quote is pretty clear on Alexis Diaz. So I get the jump, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Any other risers you want to talk about? Most of them make kind of sense to me. Or do you want to hit the fallers?
Just real quick on, so the second highest riser is Jazz Chisholm. For me, so Jazz Chisholm has gone from like 40 to 32, 39 to 32. Jazz Chisholm's almost a second rounder now in 15-team leagues, early third rounder in 12-teamers. I love Jazz Chisholm, but like, I think that's getting too expensive for me. I don't know what you think, but like, I need to see him. And this is, I mean, we both kind of draft the same way, but like, he only has 700 career at bats and just like over two partial seasons. I need to see him stay healthy for a whole year before I could do like maybe a fourth round Jazz Chisholm. Sure. Maybe I take a shot late second, early third round in a 15 teamer Jazz Chisholm. I don't know. I think the price is getting expensive, man.
Yeah. It 100% is getting expensive. Like you talk about where people are going. We're talking pick 32 in an NFBC. Jose Altuve is going right next to him. Rodon, Marcus Semien, even Jacob DeGrom right before him. JT Realmuto, Francisco Lindor. A lot more stability in those picks for early picks compared to Jazz. Jazz might have the ceiling in most of those guys, potentially. Mm-hmm. There's no arguing that. But the ceiling, can he reach? That's a humongous question with Jazz Chisholm. So I love the man. I hope he proves all of us wrong and he's worthy of a first-round pick because just he's so much fun for baseball. But then again, with the pitch clock, do they have a home run trot clock? Because he'll need it. That's the fun part when he's pimping out all those home runs. We'll see. But I'm a fan of that as well. Let's talk some ADP fallers real quick here. You know, some of them are pretty simple. Guys are hurt. Lance McCullers, Aaron Ashby. Pretty simple. Felix Bautista went from 71 to 87. You talked about guys that you take advantage of drops. I'll combine him with Nestor Cortez, 113 to 127. Cortez is already back to 100% essentially just because he missed a little, you know, ramp up. So guys like that stand out. I think there's not too much explanation there. But a guy I want to ask you about, unless I missed some news somewhere along the line, I know he had like a little hiccup, but Kyle Wright going from 119 to 141. I know there was a little, like I said, hiccup, but things still seem okay with Kyle Wright, unless I completely missed something here. That's a big drop for a guy that was amazing last year.
Yeah, the Kyle Wright thing is more, cortisone shot in the shoulder. Like that
doesn't bode great, obviously.
that's why he fell.
The big
there's
fall.
A decent chance that this is a Zach Wheeler, Luis Castillo thing from last year, where like we've kind of freaked out. Kyle Wright just had a bullpen session a couple days ago and looked fine. So we'll see like how he, you know, what the velocity looks like. But that's the reason why Kyle Wright is down. At the price, 141, I don't know if I would do it. I freak out about shoulders. Maybe he's fine, but good, that's like your SP3.
Yeah, you got other pitchers, Jesus Lazardo, there's questions. Joe Ryan, Lucas Giolito, those are some of the pitchers going around him. So any of those guys tickle your fancy?
I don't know. Have you seen Giolito's velocity readings this
season? I haven't seen the spring. Should I be concerned? I haven't seen them. No,
I haven't. I'm just genuinely.
No, I haven't. I just know I'm very excited about the improvements he's made over the offseason. So I hope it translates. I'm a big Gio bounce back guy. So
one of the fallers that, it's just 30 picks, but from 252 to 286 is Dylan Floro. Yeah. Like, I think Dylan Floro, and I think that fall is because of the AJ Puck news, but I think AJ Puck is hurt. I think they just came out either today or yesterday.
The sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening, too.
Yeah. So, like, I think you're getting a closer, at least for the first half, and Dylan Floro at pick now 286. That's a faller where I'm like, why? I thought the price was already pretty decent on Dylan Floro. So, if you're looking for like, all you need is a first half closer, and if you think you can fab one during the year, that's great. But if you draft Dylan Floro, I think you start with the closer on opening day.
Question: Dylan Floro at 286 or Kyle Finnegan at 236?
I'll go Floro.
Yep, I'm with you. I'd rather take Floro for half a season to get maybe 10-ish saves, maybe 15 if he runs real hot. I'll take my chances. And then it's a 12-team league. There'll be replacement value. You can just be ahead of the game. Follow like the guys like the reliever recons, the Ryan Roofs, the baseball HQ, Doug Dennis and stuff. And a couple weeks before the trade deadline, start adding guys for a buck. Like, just be ahead of the game, and you'll be – because you can get this as your closer three, maybe four if you want to get real crazy in a 12-team league. And just add those 10 to 15 saves and move on. Floro's actually a legit reliever. So I think it's a really interesting spot for sure.
Doug Dennis really thinks Dylan Floro sucks, which is kind of.
Oh, I know. He's also in love with Andrés Muñoz. Did you happen to see Doug Dennis on Potapalooza by chance?
I did.
I saw his closing statements as I was waiting in the background to come in, and I'm glad I wasn't on air because I was laughing so hard. Doug Dennis is amazing. Just an amazing human being. That's all I can say. Just a great man.
And you'll know why if you come out to First Pitch Arizona or Florida. First Pitch Florida this weekend, he's down there. But awesome guy.
He's an amazing human being. Any other fallers here? Because most of them, to me, make a lot of sense. Like Rushman's fallen a little bit. I guess it's kind of the buzz between catchers and prospects. Everything else seems kind of normal to me, unless you're seeing something. Yep.
No, I think that, it's your injury guys and the question you need to ask for yourself. And I kind of went through this exercise for both of us at the top of the show is just at the new price, would you take them there?
Is the juice worth the squeeze? Yeah.
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
All right. This is the part of the show I've been waiting for a couple days now, actually, because I've said it before. And I don't just say it because I like the guy. Ryan's a very, very smart human being. He's very good when it comes to putting graphs together. I can't wait till Ryan explains what PLV is. So the floor is yours, my friend.
Go grab another noon. Come back in 5 minutes. No. Anyone who listened to PitchCon. So this is a pitcher list that Nick Pollock, Kyle Bland, he has a whole team behind this metric they've been working on. Nick was talking to me about it at First Pitch Arizona. He wanted to like tell me all about it. He couldn't, but he's been working on this for years. Like this is a year long, multiple year project called PLV and just Google pitcher list PLV. There's a link to that. I put my Bloomboard out and then I linked to Nick's piece explaining what it is and how to use it. But basically what it is, it's a way to judge. It's kind of like Eno Stuff Plus. It's a way to judge a quality of a pitch based on its movement, its location, its velocity. I'm sure a ton of other factors, but like just the quality of a pitch, and they put a number to it. And so the big thing that Nick says in PLV, and Nick also, I think he did two presentations on this on PitchCon, so you could also look up at YouTube. He goes into just a lot more detail on this, but essentially he doesn't really care if a pitcher throws like a perfect slider that just dives out of the zone at the end. It somehow gets hit for a double or home run. Like, it was a great pitch. That pitch is going to grade out well in PLV just based on the movement, location, and all that stuff that happened to it. Whereas if it's like an 0-2 and you have a cement mixer down the middle, and I don't know, hitter's just expecting something else, doesn't swing. Like, yes, you get a strikeout with it, but it wasn't a great pitch. And so that general concept to me makes a lot of sense, is you're just judging the effectiveness of a pitch based on what that pitch does, irregardless of what the hitter decides to do.
Not about the result, more about the
actual
pitch.
Exactly. So like that concept really rang true to me. And so like Nick's done a great job of not only, you know, inventing this metric, but when on pitcherlist.com, he has tools that you can go look up pitchers PLV values. And so he does things where each pitcher's pitch gets a PLV rating. The pitcher in general gets a PLV rating. He's done really cool stuff about a quality pitch percentage minus a bad pitch percentage. So you can group every single pitch. That was a good pitch or a bad pitch. And you can take the difference of those and see who. Like, there's just a lot of really cool stuff that Nick has done with it. And it's not just pitchers. There's hitters as well. But for this board, I just focused on pitchers because I'm just kind of diving into this. But that's the general gist of what PLV is. It's just looking at pitches and the quality of those pitches without really caring what happens after it crosses the plate.
And shameless plug here, I usually hate doing this so far in advance, but if you really want to learn about PLV, noon Eastern on Tuesday, Nick Pollock will be on Bench with Bubba to talk about PLV. So,
oh, what a
we got that coming up as well. But
that was
full hour or so with Nick.
All right. So. Well, that was the that was the like 3-minute version. It is really cool, and it's just an example of me like. I'm trying to up my game and stay current with, like, I really do think this is the kind of the next wave of pitching analysis, is this really detailed stuff about how pitches are thrown, how they interact with each other, how they sequence. I really think this is like PLV specifically, but just like this, where he's going with it. And so like, I really want to start incorporating this kind of stuff into my analysis.
It makes a lot of sense for people that just like baseball, not even fantasy baseball per se. And it goes into what you're saying, how Nick explains, okay, if he throws a slider like down and away and falls off and the guy like goes Vladimir Guerrero Sr. and somehow hits a double, it wasn't a bad pitch. And if you can duplicate that, the pitcher's going to be more successful than the hitter way more often. Now, if he goes and hangs a cement mixer, like you say, and it gets a strikeout, I've watched Sergio Romo throw a slider enough to know if you hang that enough, it's going out of the freaking ballpark. And that's a bad pitch. That's not what you want. And so that's where this value, like Ryan is saying, is a good thing. Like, it's more of a, if this guy can throw this good pitch enough, that's where you get the higher rating, I'm assuming, then it's a quality pitch that makes you a quality pitcher. And on this Bloom board, which Ryan will explain, we have pitchers that have at least 3 pitches with very, very good metrics, which in the end will probably give you a very good overall arsenal to make you a very good pitcher, which is things we're looking to target. I'm pretty sure that's what I'm gauging out of this wonderful Bloom board. So Ryan, real quick, if you want to explain the Bloom board, we'll get into a couple pitchers to talk about that have some very nice ADPs, if we believe these like I always want to say stuff, but that's Eno's thing. But if they're stuff, in theory, their pitches are this good, we might have a value here.
Exactly. And so what I did with this board is I took Nick's ratings and I looked at all the pitchers, starting pitchers in baseball with 3 pitches above average, okay, above average for that pitch. There are 27 of them, or there were 27 of them last year. Over half of them are going inside the top 100, so I don't really care about those guys. Like, their pitches are good, they're getting drafted high, they're good pitchers. What I care about is that bottom half. So who's the crew going outside the top 100? That's the kind of stuff I like to do, is take, you know, Nick did the hard work doing PLV and giving these ratings. I'm going to throw who's got the, you know, 3 above average pitches and going outside of a certain ADP, and I'll throw that on a board. And so a ton of names that, like, it's interesting
that we like
that we love, like that we absolutely love. So
I noticed that's like the first thing I noticed. I was like, oh boy.
Yeah. And so, like, I don't know, you don't want to just like blindly use this list, because they're, I mean, it's fantasy, so we do need to take into account volume, innings, wins, like that sort of thing. Yeah. But this is I don't know. Like this, this looked really good to me.
It's another supporting thing. Like that's the beautiful thing about all these brilliant minds that we have doing this now, is there's so many tools. And it's like, it's to the gist of the Bloom boards we talked about, is it's to open your mind to dig in more to a guy. This helps you dig in more on these things for a guy. Like Nate Eovaldi's on this list. We just talked about Nate Eovaldi about 25 minutes ago. Yep. And he said, maybe we should temper things a bit because of the innings and the injuries. Doesn't mean he doesn't have great stuff. We've said he's been a Bloom board icon for years. But at the same time, like Ryan's saying, don't just buy into it because he's on this list. It gives you something else to look at, though. Like yep. a guy, for instance, that is very intriguing. Like, well, not intriguing, but like Jose Quintana on this list. I think we all know who Jose Quintana is. Yes, he's got great stuff. Is this something we should probably buy into at 332? Maybe. We'll see. But the guy right above him is the first guy I wanted to bring up because I know Ryan's a huge fan of this individual. And Ryan took him in labor late. I know I've taken him in a couple drafts of late as well. And that's Tyler Anderson. And it's a guy that Ryan mentioned in our live stream that we did. If you guys listened to it, like, maybe it was a couple weeks ago, even on this show, maybe it wasn't the live stream, was how is a guy that did what he did last year, all the wins, all the stuff, going so late still? And like Mike Gianella commented on Twitter about it and everything. ADP of 290, he's got three very solid pitches. So what's your thoughts on Tyler Anderson?
Yeah, this did stem from our conversation a few weeks ago, and I did follow up on this, and this was just a mind-boggling stat. I've got ADP data going the last 8 years. There has not been a pitcher drafted outside the top 200 coming off a 3 ERA and a 1 whip season until Tyler Anderson this year. Tyler Anderson's coming off a 257 ERA and a 1 whip. 280 ADP. Again, no one has ever been drafted outside the top 200 to what Tyler Anderson has been doing or did last year. And Anderson's going at 280. You throw this quality of pitch metric PLV on top of that, and Tyler Anderson with a pretty much truly revamped arsenal with LA, that just further bolsters the Tyler Anderson love. And you can say, like, sure, that was the Dodgers, and now he's not on the Dodgers anymore. But it's not like Tyler Anderson is suddenly going to forget everything he did in Los Angeles. Like, he learned some things. It worked. I would imagine Tyler Anderson will do those similar things this year. So, like, Tyler Anderson is an absolute freaking steal, man, where he's going.
Yep, I love it too. I've been buying into it ever since we had that conversation a few weeks ago. I'm like, I need to pay more attention to Tyler Anderson. That makes way too much sense. Another guy on this list, real quick, your boy Trevor Rogers at 253. Yeah. He checks the box, had a good spring debut. There's that if you want to buy into first time stuff. But here's your boy.
I'm planning on my next PLV Bloom board is going to be, and this Rogers popped on this, and it sucks. I don't want to draft this guy, man. He was one of the biggest gainers from first half to second half PLV. And that's where PLV can really, these pitch metrics, not just PLV stuff plus whatever, they can really shine in small samples. And what Trevor Rogers did just result wise and skill wise, when he came back in the second half last year, the pitch metrics very much back up what Trevor Rogers did, which again, like, I don't know, man, I've got to have a really short memory, but I would imagine I have Trevor Rogers on a few of the bigger teams coming in March. This is a reason for that. All three of his pitches, changeup, fastball, and slider, above average last year.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, sometimes the short memory is great. Second half, the changes he made was good. He's still super young. Like, maybe we do need to kind of reevaluate things. He wasn't really hurt. Like, if he was hurt, it'd be one thing. He wasn't. We'll see. Jordan Montgomery, our boy Jomo, was up here at 151. I love seeing that on the list.
Of course. Ryan's Ray's on there, Springs and Rasmussen. Yep. The one, the Bassett one that, like, four. Go ahead. Yeah,
that's like, he's got four pitches.
Chris Bassett shocked me the most out of anybody on this list, man, because I don't know what you think of Chris Bassett. I just think of, like, a dude who throws a lot of innings, is pretty good, yep. But, like, I don't know, just kind of safe.
Not flashy. Yeah, safe. He's not flashy, doesn't crush you. Like, he's there. He eats innings for you.
You look at this and, like, curveball, cutter, sinker, slider. He's the only one with four on this list. Four above average pitches,
that's impressive.
Fascinating. Quick trivia question for you, Bubba. I no idea if you'll get it, but there's only one pitcher in baseball last year who had five.
Five pitches.
I'll give you a hint. Not, he's going No, I should bring up his ADP. 5 above average pitches. He's going around 70th ADP.
70th ADP with 5.
So he's not like a Burns or Cole or.
At first, I was thinking Shohei because he's got a million pitches.
Yeah, no.
Darvish?
Really good guess. It's Max Fried.
My Max dog. Fried. Now you're going to really break my boy in. I've been Max Fried
is the only, at least from the numbers I ran, you can confirm it with Nick next week, but Max Fried's the only starter in baseball with 5 above average pitches.
It's hard to find a pitcher with 5 pitches, period. I know. So to have 5 above average, that is insane.
Yeah.
You'll have to ask Nick. I want to know what the is there a minimum pitch qualification for this? Because you know, like we'll look at some metrics, and it's like the dude throws like 2% of the time. So does that count? Like that
No, Nick. Not to answer for Nick, but the data that he at least posts publicly is a minimum of 100 pitches. I use a minimum of 300 pitches for this board. So like Max Fried clears that. Yeah, it's not just like a pitch he throws 2% of the time.
Cool, that's impressive. I love Max Fried. That guy's Cy Young coming his way one of these days. It's going to happen, and people are going to just be so sad about it. But all right, any final thoughts on PLV? It's awesome. I'm looking forward to digging in on it more. It's a cool new metric that I kind of toyed with, but haven't had the time to dig in like you have with this. I'm looking for this, and you mentioned they have hitters. I've seen like Scott Chu and others putting out like these graphs on hitter selectiveness and things. Like so many. Like just insanely brilliant things, but they're doing it in a way that even dummies like me can figure it out, which is pretty awesome.
And that's what, like, I'm just barely scratching the surface. Like I need to spend a lot more time on it and learn. Like I haven't even looked at the hitter side. Nick did something really cool where he takes this PLV, which is just like a number, and usually 5 is league average, but he did a thing where he scaled it to ERA. So like, that's something we all know and understand. Like, a pitch has an ERA. So like that's if you cool. have a slider with a, there's a few guys with like a sub-2 ERA on a pitch. That's not their actual like ERA on that pitch, but it's just that PLV number equated to ERA. And so that's something that's like super simple to understand.
It makes sense because like you said, there's a PLV for like the overall pitcher, not just the pitches. So it could be like an XFIP type thing, another ERA indicator type deal. So it could... be a cool
not
deal.
To steal Nick. I mean, Nick will talk about it. I think he's developed a whole projection system based off this. So it's exciting stuff.
It's gonna be
free
fun.
Commercial for Pitcherless.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I know Ryan and I have met like many times with him. Literally one of the most genuine human beings you will ever meet. Like just seriously. So yeah, go check it out. Like I said, I try not to plug all my stuff all the time on here, but I am having him on next Tuesday. I booked that earlier this week. So
I legitimately did not know that. So
yeah, so it'll be fun to talk to him about this because I'm very curious about whenever new metrics come out, because it takes me longer to figure things out, I always have the person on my show. That's my thing. It's like, we're going to sit here and I'm going to ask you questions I want to hear. Hopefully the listeners figure it out. we're going to go through it.
That's why the people love you, man.
that's how we do things. All right. Talking about the people, listener question time on Bubba the Bloom. Let's have a little fun. We got 4 or 5 questions. You guys are coming through. Remember, we'd be down to do a whole mailbag episode. We've talked about it. So if you guys want to bring the questions throughout the week or something, I'll save them. We can do a whole show if you want. Just come and bring her. Hit up Bubba in the Bloom. Just at Bubba in the Bloom. Put a thing in there. We'll figure you out. Corbin Young, our buddy, who's been crushing it as always. Would you prefer Severino or Cortez since they go close in drafts? That's his first question. They both go close. I'd go Cortez personally.
I'd go Nestor Cortez as well. We mentioned
Nasty
him earlier.
Nestor, that like, mustache, baby.
Yep. And falling because of, I think, a minor injury. I think he'll be fine. So Cortez for me.
And then a kind of tongue-in-cheek joke because he's all team Mitch Keller. Why isn't Mitch Keller on here?
old Mr. January, Mitch Keller. Everyone gets excited. I mean, the dude did, I don't know. He's teasing us again. Yes, new cutter this spring. New arsenal last year, like higher velocity, the results weren't there. So I don't know. Pittsburgh might not win very much either. So
the wins is a huge problem, but I will say this much as we make fun of Mitch Keller, he had a 3.91 ERA last year. Now his whip was 1.4. That's atrocious. Not going to like try to sugarcoat that one at all, but he had a 3.91 ERA, which is hard to fathom if you're talking Mitch Keller. So it's pretty impressive.
And a 2.93 in the second half.
Yep. Our buddy Alan De Leonardis, Mr. Birdwatcher himself, has a question. Would you rather gamble on a healthy sale going around the 10th round of a 15-team NFBC or go with one of Montgomery, Rasmussen, or Springs? I'll go with one of the Montgomery, Rasmussen, or Springs side of things.
Yeah, I would too. Not to say it's the right answer. Alan, maybe you're deciding this in your TGFBI team right now. I could see Sale doing a Justin Verlander last year. Like that's the ceiling. It's just not a pick I would make. And a 12 teamer, I'd think about it. 15 teamer pitching so bad. If it doesn't work out, replacement level is awful. I'd go with like a Jomo.
He also wants to know what wine goes well with Captain Crunch.
Oh God. So I ate some Captain Crunch in my day. I was peanut butter. Captain Crunch was like pretty much every morning, peanut butter Captain Crunch. But that was well before I've never that intersects. So like I drink wine now. I don't drink Captain or eat Captain Crunch. Any of that intersection between wine and cereal. So
I've been trying to like think about it because I love wine. I like if you're going peanut butter, like chocolate peanut
butter.
Eat
cereal? Do you eat cereal still?
Not very often, no. I remember the last time I had cereal. Unless it was like at a hotel, I had a freaking continental breakfast. I couldn't tell you when I had cereal.
With like old batter.
Yeah. I'm thinking maybe like a let's have fun. A Grenache sounds great, Alan. Let's have some fun with that.
I don't even know what a Grenache is.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I do. Patrick McCullough says Adley falling is interesting. People just realizing how deep the catcher pool is. I think that's part of it, and some of it's like catcher pool, and you know, it is the whole prospect thing. Like, are we over excited type thing is the way I look at it.
Yeah, probably. I think we're also starting to see pitchers move up a little bit.
Yep.
So someone has to move down. So it might be some of that. But I think it is more just kind of like the market is slowing down a little bit on the hype, which I think they should. I've made the point for a while that like Adley, I don't know if he has the power in 2023 at least, like long term, whatever. I don't know if he has the power, and he walks so much that like it doesn't help you in 5x5 all that much.
Yeah, he was one of my busts on Plotapalooza. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Ray Butler, he has mentioned closers with perceived security are the ones on the up. Yep, that makes sense. And then Simon P has a couple questions for us. Who will start for Lux in LA? Could M. Bush, I forget what his first name is, get some playing time and push Rojas back to the bench? We'll start with that. We think it's Rojas, right?
I think it's Rojas. It's Michael Bush. He could play second. Michael Bush is like the ultimate fantasy prospect where the bat looks really good in the upper minors. He can't really play defense. So like he's not going to play shortstop. So I think Rojas is relatively safe there until my man Chris Taylor swoops in and posts a $30 season. I don't even know if like Michael Bush at second base would hang and JD Martinez is the full-time DH. So I think it's the Miguel's up the middle, Chris Taylor with the splash of Chris Taylor enough so that Chris Taylor should be on your mid to late round radars.
Then he asked about Brendan Rodgers playing time in Colorado. We kind of hit on that earlier. His other question, who are some of your favorite DC darts after round 40? One pitcher, one position player.
I saw that we should have kept our ADP thing going, like 300 to 400, 400 to 500. I think this is post 600.
600. I just did the math on my phone real quick. This is post 600. So I got to get off the OC ADP and pull up good old DCs here.
Yeah.
Post 600. It's going to get fun. We've done a few of them, so it makes sense.
But, yeah, I feel like we should have at least
One or two. A pitcher and a hitter. Okay, I'm at 600. Here we go. I have had a lot of Trevor Williams just because he'll get innings. Say that. Not sexy by any means.
No.
But I have a lot of him. Your boy Brian Baker worked for a couple weeks.
Yeah, until Bautista's back.
You know, one I'll mention, and I saw a lot of people talk about it when the trade happened. Curlin mentioned it recently with some of the injuries in Cleveland. I mean, in Cincinnati with Will Myers and guys banged up. Will Benson's interesting if you want to bet.
Yeah, yep.
I think that's a very interesting one.
One name, I may not pronounce the last name right. Cleveland pitcher Tanner Bibby.
Okay.
Really good in the minors on an organization that knows pitching, and I think is like a sixth or seventh starter for Cleveland. And we all know what happens to those sixth or seventh starters. Eventually they get it. So Tanner Bibby would be one for sure.
One pitcher I'd mentioned, we've talked about him before. If you're looking at spec closers late, Griffin Jacks from Minnesota. I think that's a fun one as well. But
it is hard to find a hitter, man.
It gets rough. It gets real rough back here. Like, this is where I just take a ton of spec. Oh, yeah. There's Lamet. I did take him recently in a draft, actually. This is definitely spec pitching time of the world. Hitting and that's, not so much.
I mean, honestly, like, that is how I have structured a lot of my DCs, where in the last 10 rounds, it is more of these spec pitchers. Hitting on hitters this late is so damn hard.
Mm-hmm. It's very, very hard. That's why when you build your roster, you try to like focus on getting those hitting cores early, starting pitching cores early, and pepper the board late with all your other options type situation. All right, Mr. Bloomfield, that'll wrap up another edition of Bubba and the Bloom. It's been a fun one, a lot going on. I probably got long-winded at times, but that happens on a night like tonight. We're coming back Tuesday with a special episode of Bubba and the Bloom.
We are. We are coming back Tuesday.
We'd like to elaborate on that.
We got, this is just timing. We're not ignoring Bubba's drafts, but
I never insinuated that.
Couldn't do the 9 a.m. Tuesday live stream.
He's in a league that has normal draft times.
I might put my job at jeopardy. Now, Tuesday, March 7th, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. We're going to be doing the Tout Wars 15-team mixed draft. So very similar structure to Labor. So it'll kind of be that same look and feel. We'll have the draft board up. We'll be talking. Bubba will be making fun of my picks. Probably have Gialdi in the comments making fun of all my picks. That was a blast. So hope to recreate that with Tout Wars Tuesday night. May even sneak in a special guest who's also in the draft. So we'll see if we can get him on. So
I'll have to behave myself if that's the case.
We'll tease that a little bit. No, you're good.
I know.
So yeah, that'll be Tuesday night, and then regular show next Thursday. So it's all happening.
It's getting close, man. It's March. Like, it's, I know people think it's funny, but for baseball fans, we are real close. We got a WBC starts next week, and that'll go for a few weeks. Literally, we have games about a month away, like Ryan said. Like, we're gonna have games in March. Like, it's coming, the end of March, we have games. So it's gonna be awesome. Games that count, I should say. Of course we're gonna have games. We have games tomorrow. But it's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be great. Make sure you check out Ryan on the Twitter there at RyanBHQ. Go check out his speculator columns over there at Baseball HQ. Always good stuff. Go find out who the next Adelis Garcia is. You won't regret it. Trust me. You can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. This is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 45. Catch you guys next time.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.